Hey everybody, this is X-Punk X. Before the podcast today, I just wanted to explain a little bit why the podcast is released a little bit late this week, and why the audio quality is not quite up to par like we like it. Unfortunately, the audio file that I had recorded got corrupted, and so we actually couldn't use that file, so we're actually using the recording that we got from Daryl and from TalkShoe. So it's not quite the same quality as we like to have it, but again, we were able to get the audio, and so again, I apologize it's late, and enjoy the show. Welcome to episode 103 of the Geocaching Podcast. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate on the show today, please call 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners. That can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. Our voicemail line is 206-350-3GPS. And we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Well, Daryl, welcome to the show tonight. It's been a while for you since you were off last week.
Yeah, had a really good time, though, up at Mackinac. Took a few days to recover. We went up to Mackinac Island for a geocaching event. And Andy, I'm sure you followed some of that on Twitter. But
yes. It
was not the nicest weather. We got some pretty nasty weather. Went over some not very nice trails, mountain bike trails that were rattling apart our bikes. One guy's seat post rattled itself apart. I lost a couple of screws. We got sticks through derailleurs. I had to do like some quick on-trail maintenance. And it was a really interesting, fun experience. Cleared out 60-something caches in 2 days, entirely by bike and walking. And anyone who's been to Mackinac knows that this is one of those places where it's like a big hill, and no matter where you go, you're always going uphill. Even as you go downhill, you're going uphill. So it was challenging. You know,
at least with riding your bike, you know, you probably didn't need to hear the podcast last week that we did on bike maintenance. So sounds like you got some pretty good opportunities to do that on the trail.
Oh yeah. And had to do a lot of it before we got the bikes out there, too, because they've been sitting around for the entire winter and then some. Now I still have to go back and do a lot more maintenance because I've got mud everywhere. I have the two water bottles on the inside of my frame, and about 11 o'clock or so, I look down. You know, we've only been out for about 2 hours, and the lids, fortunately, I've got the Nalgene bottles that have the nice plastic caps over the top. And those caps were completely covered in mud. So I would not have been drinking any of that water otherwise. They have horses up there, and the horses leave their stuff behind, and it gets all over you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't drink
that either. That's not too good.
No. So I was really happy to have those nice plastic covers over the top, and ended up going through almost all of that water, too. But last weekend was also a lot of fun. The Huron-Clinton Metro Park series for 2009 was released. And this is a series of caches in all of the Huron-Clinton Metro Parks. There's 13 of them all over the Metro Detroit area, including like the Ann Arbor area. So anyone who's familiar with the area knows how wide an area that really is. But 11 of those caches count toward completing the final challenge. Two of them are just bonus caches. It took 2 days for TL4 and I to complete it in Firefly 03. We spent one full day going from one side almost all the way to the other side of the park system, and then we took Sunday. And it only took us about 3 hours to complete. If we had started a little bit earlier Saturday, we probably could have completed all of them. But it was a really good, fun challenge with everything from traditionals to letterbox to a couple of really nice caches in there, but a really tough puzzle cache that we got first to find on, because it was a little bit more challenging. The puzzle was originally screwed up in the listing, and discovered that the iPhone actually pulls this information from, like, an older version. So we were looking at the wrong version of the puzzle when we tried it and had to go back to the webpage to get the updated version. So it took us a little while. It was a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to doing it again next year. Also, I wrapped up work just a little while ago on the much-requested article about caching with the iPhone 3G. And this is something that a lot of people have been asking me for, which is just, what kind of software do I use? What are my settings on the phone? What kind of extra hardware I use? So rather than trying to keep answering all of these emails that have been coming in, I just put together a nice article on my website, or on the blog, actually. And that will be posted. Actually, it should be posted right now if anyone wants to go over and check that out. Now, Andy, what have you been up to?
Well, this weekend was really, really nice. I had a chance to take the boys out all day Saturday. It was National Scrapbooking Day, so Julie was actually doing some scrapbooking. So me and the boys went out and hit 4 caches over the weekend, which is kind of nice to get out and do some caching, especially with the boys. So that's really about it. It's just the caching. I cleaned up my garage too, made that a priority. So got the garage cleaned, did some caches, and we're good to go. So
hey, it's springtime, so you got to get that spring cleaning out of the way.
It is. It was bothering me because I have had my tool bench there, and it's been dirty for almost a year and a half now, and I couldn't find anything on it. So I decided it was time to get out and clean it, and so it's definitely clean now. I can find everything that I need to find.
Very important.
It is. Now, hey, Daryl, in the news since last week, on last Wednesday, GSAC version 7.5.2 was released. Many of the features were bug fixes. However, there were some new features and the functions that are including adding an option to the LORM drive to the GPS info function, and then the GPS info function also trapped all the errors so we don't get a hard crash in GSEC, but rather a soft macro error. They also added a rollback to the transaction command and with more information. And there's lots of more bug fixes they did in this release, so we'll go ahead and place the link to that in our show notes, which can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. Now, tonight, this is a topic that we've had on our plates to do for quite a while now. I received a review unit of the PN40, the DeLorme PN40. Daryl went ahead and bought one. And people have been asking us to do this review of this PN40. Well, we decided to hold off on it because they had been doing some fixes on it and were threatening to release their cache register software. So we finally got a chance to play with that. And play. Unfortunately, we can't really talk about that because we have had to sign a non-disclosure form. So, but we do have. I had a chance to review it. We'll talk a tiny bit about that in the show. However, but we decided we're going to go ahead and finally do the review. So, the EarthMate. I'll kick it off here with some of the specs on the GPS. The EarthMate GPS PN40 with Topo 2000. Or with Topo 7.0 starts at $399.95 list, and cheapest weekly found online is $328 US. The device dimensions are 2.43 width by 5.25 inches high and 1.5 inch deep. It's got a 2.2 inch 65K color transflective TFT color display, which is 220 by 176 pixels. It's got a 3-axis electronic compass with included accelerometer. It's a barometric altimeter. It uses 2 AA batteries, high sensitivity 32-channel Cartesio chipset that's 500 meg available internal flash memory. It supports the SDHC high-capacity SD cards up to 32 gig, holds up to 10 tracks, and that's 10,000 points per track or 1,000 user-defined waypoints and 50 routes. It requires Windows to load the maps. It loads caches through the browser plugin on either the Mac or the Windows, and requires the beta firmware on that, or the cache register software, which is in beta for Windows and Mac.
Now, competitively, Daryl? Based on price, this is roughly in line with the Oregon 200, which is a $449.99 U.S. price, or the Magellan Triton 1500, which is closer to $400. But based on features, it really falls between something more like the Garmin GPS Map 60 CSX and the Oregon 400T. So comparatively, that's where you can kind of see this unit falling.
Some of the, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things we like and do not like about the GPS. But first, we're going to talk about the things that we did like based on the beta firmware. So we're talking about the firmware that has the functions of the GPS or the geocaching functions. One of the things that I liked is once the beta firmware was released, there's great support for field notes. And the field notes are really easy to do. They have a handful of predefined, like TFTC type things like that. I do also like the fact that the paperless caching works with it really well. There's a lot of information. Pretty much anything that you can find on the web page is found in the GPS. So any information about the cache, all of the link, all of the descriptions, all of the a few of the logs are in there, and it tells whether it's trackable or it's got trackables in it, whether it's what the rating, terrain rating, and stuff like that is. I did really, really like that. I mean, obviously, it doesn't have support for pictures, so you can't see if there is the, you know, if it's a puzzle. But pretty much other than that, like text-based paperless works really well. Daryl, what else did you like about it?
Well, getting back to the geocaching, actually, this is one of the better implementations I've seen. It does have good field notes, the best I've seen in any of the GPSs so far, much better than the Garmin. And unlike the Garmin's, it does allow you to move caches and enter those caches in the field, so you don't have to have them predefined. If you go out and have to do something on the lines of a multi-cache or a puzzle cache, you can plug those in the field or move the location if you'd prefer, which really makes a difference. But the fast power on is really nice. I got a signal from Cold Start in the apartment faster than any other unit I've tried. And it gets a lock, and it works. I really, really was very impressed by that. You know, it really is very much like the 60 as far as the accuracy goes, the 60 CSX. Seems to be about the same as the Oregon, but a little bit more reliable and doesn't bounce around like some of the issues we've seen on the Oregon or the Colorado.
Yeah, I've had really, really good accuracy with it. Like you said, the same thing. I was sitting actually doing a live review or a live unboxing of it on Ustream, and I was sitting in my living room, and I got a fairly good accurate lock really quickly. And actually, it was kind of funny because I didn't even realize that I had showed all that on the thing, and I had recorded it. And Spindrock Bob said, "Hey, by the way, I know where you live because you accidentally showed your coordinates." But so that was kind of funny. But yeah, it was really accurate. Every time that I've cached with it, every cache that I've done with it, very, very, very accurate. I found the cache every time. It put me right in the area. So it definitely is a very, very accurate thing. Very accurate GPS.
Now, another thing that I really liked on this unit is that the topo maps that are included are routable, making them the only set of maps you need. You don't have to get a topo map and a street map. You can work just off the topo. And it comes with a CD-ROM, so that you actually, it's a DVD-ROM that you can use on the computer as well. So unlike when you get the Oregon 400 or the Colorado 400 series with the maps loaded, where you have no way to access those maps from the computer, here it's on the CD, or the DVD actually, and you can access those on the computer, do all of your routing and stuff on the computer as well. So it is a very nice function to have that in the box. It is a rugged unit, which takes a beating very well. It feels very much to me like a natural progression of the Magellan units of the late 90s, which is what I kind of grew up on and really came to love, is like the Sport Track and the Meridian. Kind of a lot like the Explorist, but definitely a more grown-up version of that interface. Seems like working from those, it's a very similar interface, and I picked it up fairly quickly. Most of all, though, I really like having a serious competitor, Garmin.
Yeah, one of the things that I liked about it, one of the last things that I liked about it, was the cash register is kind of nice. I can't really say a whole lot about that, and people have commented in our chat room, what's the point of bringing it up if we can't really talk about it? It is very nice. It does work well, just like it's promised. You are able to load, you know, your PQ, your pocket query off of it. About all I can say on it. I don't like the but not having the ability to use the other options to load it like GSAC. I always filter
well,
my stuff.
Well, there is that hack for. There is that hack though for GSAC, so you can actually load it through GSAC, but it's not an officially supported means. There's also a couple of other hacks using the plugin too.
With the plugin, I didn't have any luck with it. I had luck with it for a while, and then it stopped working. I don't know what happened. I had the same plugin that nothing had changed, but it stopped loading my it stopped connecting and loading. You know, so I had to do everything one by one. So. So that those are things we like about it. It is very, I mean, orange. If you've seen the pictures on it, it is very, very orange. It is hard to lose, except for Daryl lost his.
Yeah, and it's the only time I've ever lost a GPS or electronic device, I might add. So if it's bright orange and you can't miss it, I guess that's when I am going to lose it.
So, yeah, I mean, out of the box, I did like it. It was good. It's nice to cache with.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that we didn't like so much about the PN40. And the first thing I'm going to mention is that the unit is really bulky and not very ergonomic. Didn't really fit well in my hand, and it was even worse with Firefly 03, who has much smaller hands than I do. So we weren't really impressed with it from that aspect. And a lot of that comes from the way that they weather sealed it, and it is very nicely weather sealed. But the downside is it's not a unit that I really like to carry.
Yeah, and that brings up to my point too. It is very bulky. In fact, it's kind of weirdly shaped too. Like you said, Daryl, one of the things that Jules said when I got it out of the box is it doesn't fit in her hand real well, and it's easy to flip out because it's kind of like bottom heavy, but it kind of easily could flip out of your hands.
Yeah, so, I mean, actually lost it a few times, and if it weren't for the lanyard, it would have been laying in the mud quite frequently.
And my next thing is it does eat through batteries like crazy. Guess 3 in our terms says it eats batteries for breakfast. And I did see that, especially compared to my 76 CSX. It seemed like I was always replacing the batteries in the PN40. It doesn't, no matter what I did, I don't know if what they do this different, but it definitely eats through batteries.
Well, it does chew through batteries a little bit faster than like the Oregon 300 that I have. Certainly nowhere near the battery life of the 60, even on the Oregon. But I think a lot of the reason for that battery drain is that they have two processors running in there in an attempt to speed up the maps.
Well, and I think, too, that's partly, too, because the backlight comes on every time you push the button, no matter what.
Yeah, there's definitely some work that they could do in software to reduce the power drain.
Now, one of the other things that I didn't like about it is it takes a little bit to get used to the menus. Disclaimer, though, I mean, that's going to happen with any GPS that you get used to, you know, you change to. I had that same problem when I moved from my eTrex to my 76. The buttons are a little bit different. Granted, they're still slightly the same because it's the same company. So moving to DeLorme, I've never had a DeLorme. Well, I take that back. I had the DeLorme I did have was the kind that you plug into your laptop, and it actually is like a completely external unit. But as far as a handheld unit, I've never had a DeLorme unit, and so it took some getting used to the buttons and the interface and where things were at and how to try to find them. So,
well, and this is only their second unit, you know, the first being the PN20, but you know, coming from the sleek interface of the Colorado and the iPhone. The PN40 really kind of feels dated, and it is much harder to use than either one of those are. And after hours of using the unit, I was still not really comfortable with it, and finding functions under screens that I didn't even know about, and I had to go into screens that I didn't know about to find functions, and there's some stuff I just really wasn't able to ever find or use. But even, you know, the Colorado and the Oregon are missing some functions. They've been slipping those in with the firmware, but they took a long time to get used to as well when coming from the 60, which is a much more simple text interface, kind of like the PN40 is, but it's very different as the way the interfaces actually function. Now, one of the other things, though, the buttons aren't as nice on the DeLorme as they were on the 60, so I was having some problems with accidental button presses because they stick out much further from the unit than most of the other GPSs, and it was easy to accidentally hit it, or hit it the wrong way, or hit the wrong button. You know, just wasn't working as well as I would like with the way that I was doing it. And the compass, I love the 3-axis compass, but it doesn't perform as well as what we had in the Explorer 600. And I found that in many cases it was getting in the way, so I just tended to ignore the arrow altogether in a very short time. And speaking of stuff that's missing from the unit, there's no support for projections. And one of the favorite puzzle caches around here is to do a projection. So I'd have to pull out the iPhone, do it on the iPhone, rather than using the PN40. And if I have a GPS, I want to be able to do those functions right in the GPS.
Now, another thing that I thought was kind of strange, especially right out of the box, is there's no actual, right as of now, no support for a supported way for loading GPX files. At first, you could go through, and I mean, you kind of hack them through the Topo 7.0 software, but it was, you lost all of your geocaching related functions. It was just waypoints. Then they got the new firmware, the beta firmware, and then they had the plugin, but you could do one at a time from the geocaching website, but that still didn't do, you know, lots and lots and lots of them. As you know, like I usually regularly load 500 caches in it.
Yeah, it is difficult to get all those caches loaded in if you got to go to each page, hit the load, wait for it to load, and it is much slower than doing it through either the 6D and GSAC or doing the direct drag and drop method of the Colorado and the Oregon.
That's true, but you know, I said that there's no official supported way. I mean, you can do it. Obviously, we've talked about the unsupported hack for the plugin and also for GSAC. Now that is going to be changing with the cache register software, which we don't really have a date as far as it when it will be out, but that will change with that.
Yeah, and that's currently in private beta. We're not allowed to talk about it. We have seen it, but we'll talk more about that hopefully once they actually open that up to a public beta. One of the other things we should mention, though, there's no support for Where I Go. So when you're getting this unit, there are certain caches that you're not going to be able to do, which is true of most of the older units, but when you get into the newer Garmin units, the Colorado and the Oregon, they do support the Where I Go. So that's something to consider. If you want to look for a forward-looking GPS, there's no support in this for the Where I Go cartridges.
Now, WV Angular asked if the cache register software will be free for the PN series owners. Yeah, I believe it is. I believe it will just be something that either eventually will come with the GPS and or be able to download off the website. Don't quote me on that, but I believe it will, because it's going to be a way to load the GPS.
Well, and my understanding is that it's going to be strictly download on a lot of this stuff that they're coming up with. So you'll be getting the standard box that has the Topo 2007 on DVD, and then all the extra stuff is going to be download.
Now, one of the things that I didn't like was the maps are kind of hard to load compared to Garmin. And with my Garmin, I can click the whole especially with the NC versions, I can click a whole state and have all of the maps for the state. A little bit different with the Topo maps, but still, it's fairly easy to do. Now, with the PN40... you have to buy sections of the map, so you have to. You can't buy. You buy them at a time, like if you're, especially if you're talking about the satellite views. And that's one of the things that I was kind of very excited to use is the satellite views. And I was actually really disappointed in that, because at least in my area, which has really awesome like Google Maps coverage, the topo or the aerial photos on the GPS weren't great at all. Like you couldn't get in very far. It just got blurred out. And like I said, it was really hard to download. You had to download like little sections of them, like where you were at. And again, they charged for every little section. And so that's one of the things I did not like as far as loading the maps. As far as the aerial maps goes, the topo maps were not hard at all, because again, they're like, they also come right on the DVD.
Yeah, and unlike the 400T, which holds all of those maps in memory, the PN40 has to load those into the card. The card that it comes with isn't really big enough. I think I ended up going with a 2 gig card, and really only got about half of the continental U.S. in there. So you really need something more on the lines of probably like an 8 gig card to fit the entire U.S. in there. So if that's what you're looking for, is a one-time load the maps and go, and you can go anywhere in the country, then you'll have to factor in that 8 gig card to use with it.
Now, Daryl, did you want to talk about the map transfers?
Yeah, it is a little bit slower than I'd like, but it's not terribly unlike the Garmin's going to the older units. So, yeah, it was slow, but it's a one-time thing, and so it didn't really bother me that much. It does work, you know, for the topos that come with it, very much like the Garmin or even the Magellan topo maps do. So, a little bit tougher to use. A lot of that is a learning curve, I think, because we're so used to using the Garmin and the Magellan maps. But, you know, again, these are routable maps, which you don't have with either of the other two.
That is true, and that is one of the nice things with having the routable topo maps. The last thing that I think I'm going to mention here is it seems like DeLorme is a little bit slow about updating firmware and the software. We see promises on Twitter and on their forums that, you know, they're coming, and then I keep asking them, especially like with this cash register stuff, and then they say, just a few more weeks. And so it seems like they're a little bit slow. Another thing I didn't like is I am really used to, with the Garmin, I've got a separate software that I can plug in my unit and say, hey, go out and check and see if there's any firmware updates for it. And it does. I, so far, haven't found anything like that for DeLorme. So it's kind of frustrating because you have to go ahead and find out either via Twitter or via the forums when there is new firmware for it. Now, Daryl, give us the bottom line for you on this.
Well, as we already said, I lost mine. It's the first time ever. And one of the rules for a lot of the reviewers is, now that I have to send this unit back, would I buy another one? And, well, in my case, I'm not going to replace it with another PN40. Dree stole my Oregon 300. When I got the 40, she tried it, didn't like it, wouldn't touch it after becoming frustrated with the interface. So she stole my Oregon 300, and I'm back now to the 60 CSX. And quite frankly, I'm happier on the 60 CSX than I was even on the Oregon, because with the iPhone handling most of those paperless functions now, the 60 is just one of those units that I plug it in, load the caches, and it works. I don't have to worry about any crashing, any kind of beta glitches, and both the PN40 and the Oregon's have those beta glitches where it just got in the way and I had to restart. I lost settings, I lost caches, whatever. So it's really nice to just get back to the 60 CSX where everything just works.
Yeah, for me, I like the GPS. It's good competition to Garmin. It's a little bit hard to get used to coming from a Garmin. I am a Garmin supporter, and anything I have bought and would suggest is so far has been as Garmin. There are a lot of really good points on it. Overall, I'd say it doesn't really live up to the hype that everyone had for it originally, but it still is a very good unit. And as far as paperless goes, it's very good with the paperless. I mean, I would definitely, I mean, if I had to buy one unit and paperless is a huge thing for me, I would definitely do that for the paperless. It has good support for the field notes and for paperless. I would buy it for that. Definitely a good buy for that. Again, would I give up my 76? No, I really like that. But it is a good unit. Now,
as far as the recommendations go, you know, if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I probably would have recommended the PN40 over something like the 60, and I probably still would, except that Garmin has been doing rebates on the Oregon 400T, and you can get those for about the same price as you can get the PN40. So being that it's street price roughly the same for the 400T Oregon or for the PN40, I think I'd choose the Oregon over the PN40.
Now, before we have a couple more things here. Before we get into those, though, if anyone has any questions, comments, concerns about the software, the hardware, anything, give us a call, 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. If you're in our chat room, press the request to talk at the top right-hand corner. If you're just on the phone, go ahead and press the star 8 to request to talk. And if you're just listening to this live as, or listening to it as a podcast, give us a call at 206-350-3GPS, and that's a voicemail line. We'll try to answer your calls there. Daryl?
Well, before we move on, I want to mention that Bella Candy in the chat room says she thinks the PN40 has totally lived up to the hype, and she finds that the support is much better from DeLorme than from Garmin. And WV Angler said that his PN20 crashed last week, and he wasn't overly impressed with the customer support. And we also have guest three, who I'm not sure who that is, but he says that the latest firmware he's not had any problems with, and he only had one call to DeLorme and was very unimpressed with customer support. But we do have an email that came in from Paul with his views on the PN40. So I'm going to start with that. And Andy, why don't you pick up in the second paragraph? But
sure.
He says he's very happy with it. It'll be much better once the cash register comes out to the public. But the workaround works very well. He really likes having the cash information right on the GPS. He now leaves his PDA in the car and therefore won't kill it. He says he's killed a PDA in the field before, too. He likes all the different maps. He does not have the 20, so I couldn't compare it with that. But he did have the Garmin GPS 3 Plus, the Garmin GPS 5, and the eTrex Vista C, and the PN40 is a much better unit. Of course, it's also a much newer unit. That's very true. Andy, why don't you take the next paragraph?
Sure, and actually, he is guest 3, so I apologize for reading your mail as opposed to letting you call it in here. He says also that I think that after the last few months, I am now used to the unit. It was strange when I first got it after going from his Garmin's. I do like the 1,000 waypoints with up to 15,000 characters of information for the geocaches. I like the 3-axis electronic compass. Some of my friends have the eTrex GPS without the electronic compass, and they have to be moving to get the pointer to tell them which way to go. Mine still points to the GPS or the geocache even when I'm standing still. I have found many caches with my friends, and sometimes I am right. And sometimes they are. I am pointed in a completely different direction. I think that this is a different way that it processes the data compared to the Garmin. Even though a couple of my caching friends have a Garmin Colorado, I normally pull up the cache information before they do. The other caching friends turned to me for the catch information when out in the field and when needed.
At first, it was a little bit hard to get used to, but now I can run it very well. I think it's easy to use. When you use the plugin to download the caches to... I'm sorry? When you use the plugin to download the caches to it, you can do the field notes and then upload them directly to GC.com when you get back to your computer. It then puts them in time order. This is very nice. Even with my Vista C, I used to use it geocaching mode to keep track of finds. The rest of my friends do not use this mode. They do it another way.
Some of the downsides of the unit, he says, is it lacks battery life. It just lets the batteries dry fast. But so do the other new high-end GPSs, even though I think this is the worst one on battery life. I would like to see it list the found caches in time order on the unit as opposed to just in the field notes. Well, these are some of my many thoughts on this unit. Thank you, Paul. And again, thank you for putting this in. And we look forward to hearing from anybody who has used this unit before and wants to put any information in, to us here. Next week, we're going to be talking creative containers. This will work the best if you guys call in and either fill in your creative cache containers that you've seen before or call in live. So if you want to pre-call in, our number is 206-350-3GPS, and that's our voicemail number. So go ahead and leave us a voicemail. And anything you've seen, any creative cache ideas, containers, we welcome them all. Or we'd love to have you guys live. And also, when we say live, go ahead and give us a call while we're live. Our number is 724-444-7444, and our talk cache ID is 7525. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the Talk Shoe service. You can call in live 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. or you can call our voicemail line, which is 206-350-3GPS anytime of the day or night. Have a safe week and keep on caching.